If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable blade knives, fixed blade knives, and game processing kits. Now, we've all been there before, trying to field dress your wild game with a dull knife. This is where Outdoor Edge really steps in. With the Razor Safe system, you can have a brand new razor sharp blade with just the push of a button. No more dull blades and no more problems processing your wild game. To check out all of the products from Outdoor Edge, visit OutdoorEdge.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% off of your purchase. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. It's late and I'm tired. I had one of those days where we had dance, we had soccer, I had to babysit I was responsible for my youngest child, so I didn't get shit for work done today because I was playing Jenga and dominoes and cars, and we went on a golf cart ride today, and we went to the parks, and we basically just played all day long. And I love playing as much as the next guy does, but now here it is, 10 o'clock at night, and I am just getting started working for the evening, and these are the days that really are awesome but shitty at the same time. And instead of, it's the opposite of every cloud has a silver lining. It's more of a, oh man, it's a sunny day and everything's great, but there's a thunderstorm in the distance type of day. So, but that's just me bitching. I shouldn't bitch because I get to talk about deer hunting all day long. And this episode is no exception, right? We are going to be talking with my good buddy, Bob Polanic. Now, this episode was originally slated to launch on the Hunting Gear podcast. I'm going to launch it there too as a bonus episode, but I needed an episode for the Nine Finger Chronicles, and we never really talk about gear on this particular podcast anymore, just because, I don't know, I started the Hunting Gear podcast just for that purpose. But I'm going to implement this BS session, and that's all it is. It's a BS session, basically, where we talk about gear. And we talk about his elk hunt, and we talk about boots and trail cameras and packs and sleeping bags and a whole bunch of other stuff that he used on his Western trip. And I think we talk a little bit about some whitetail gear too. So it's just an all around BS session with a heavy emphasis on gear. And that's what today's episode is about. So I hope you guys enjoy it. As for what's going on here in the Nine Finger world, man, it's October 6th and I haven't even been out hunting yet in Iowa. And that is for a couple reasons. One, my schedule just is slammed right now. I am trying to get enough content put out and set aside so that when I leave for my South Dakota trip, that whole week's taken care of. And then at the same time, daddy daycare and all the stuff that goes into having three kids in a ton of activities. So I'm looking forward to maybe Sunday night. I might be able to get out and try to put an arrow through a doe and take her to the processor so I can get some more summer sausage and some more sticks and some more ground deer meat, because we go through those things pretty quick around here. But then, man, it's like trail cameras are still only showing a lot of nocturnal movement, right? And the ones that I've checked and the cell cams that are coming back to me, I mean, I've had a couple daylight images of bucks over the past, I want to say, 3 weeks, but they've all been 2 and 3 year old age range that I'm just really not, I guess I'm just not excited about. So I'm biding my time until my gut tells me I need to be in the woods. I do really want to hunt. I want to get out there, but I know that, if I get everything situated at home and with work, then I can go and really enjoy all my time that's spent in the woods. And the older I get, that's just closer and closer to November. So, plus I want to make sure I'm ready to go for the South Dakota mule deer hunt as well. So that's kind of what's going on in this neck of the woods. I want to say one thing. As you guys start to get out and you start to have your successful hunts, I don't care if it's a spike buck, I don't care if it's a doe or a giant whitetail or a moose or an elk, whatever you're hunting, a squirrel, tag the Nine Finger Chronicles in your stories, and I will share that on the Nine Finger Chronicles page as well. So I love just hearing people be outside, man. I just love that stuff. So all right, before we get into today's episode with Bob, we're going to do a really quick rundown with some gear here. And what are we going to do first? Ozonix. You guys know that I'm a huge advocate of using O3 ozone to do a number of things in the in my cycle of how I hunt, right? I'm going to tell you right now, I use it two ways. One, in the tree, and just blow that sucker out. All the ozone comes out of the unit and it goes downwind. And when it goes downwind, it distorts your scent profile. So it's putting out ozone. That ozone starts distorting your scent cone, and the deer walk through it. They notice it, but then they just are like, they're confused by it. That is the overall response that I get. And it's not a nose full of human. And when it's not a nose full of human, they don't get scared. They don't get freaked out. Sometimes they're indifferent and they maybe just continue walking. Sometimes they even get a little curious and they come a little closer. But for the most part, I have very, very rarely had an encounter downwind with whitetails with an Ozonics that hasn't been positive. I mean, they just are not snorting and they're not blowing and they're not going absolutely crazy. They're not ruining the rest of the hunt for you. And that's important to people who only have a very small amount of time throughout the season to hunt, right? 5 days, 2 days, whatever, however many days it is, every hunt's very important. And that's why I like using Ozonics in the woods. Now, outside of the woods, that is, I think it has almost a bigger functionality, if you ask me, outside of the woods, in their closets and in their dry wash bags, where you can hang your dirty, stinky clothes. You don't have to set them through the washer. You don't have to dry them, which that whole process takes a long time. Or you could just run a 30-minute dry wash cycle, cleanse your garments from odor, and the next thing you know, boom, clean. So, I don't know. Go check out their website, ozonicshunting.com, and I do got a discount code here for you. The discount code is NFC21, and that gets you a free dry wash bag with your purchase of one of their units. Next, Lone Wolf tree stands. You guys already know about how I use Lone Wolves. The Assault 4 sticks can get me anywhere I need to go. If I'm not using the fourth stick, maybe I'm only 3 sticks high and I got great cover and I'm hunting just a little bit lower, I just leave that stick right at the bottom of the tree. Or if I really need to stretch it, maybe I'm on a big incline and I'm going to try to hunt the top with the thermals blowing over top of me, then I can really stretch out the 4 to get me the height that I need. Very, very quiet setup. Very lock tight when you're actually in the tree. The stand doesn't creak and croak and make a whole bunch of noise. And the fact that it can set up in a crooked tree, it levels itself, and then you're not in the, like, you're not in a straight tree, you're in the right tree. The tree that's going to get you closest to your ultimate goal, and that's killing a whitetail. So head on over to Lone Wolf website and enter the discount code 9FC21, and you can save $50 off of all purchases over $200. So you buy a tree stand, you're saving $50 with that discount code 9FC21. ExodusOutdoorGear.com. That's the Exodus trail cameras. And I'm telling you right now, we talk about Exodus in this episode. Listen closely, because I love these trail cameras. I love the company. I love the guys that work there. And they care about their end users, which is why their cameras are so easy to operate. Not only on the basic side of things, like their lift and their trek, but even on a more complicated product like their render, all you have to do, their setup to become active for a render, is literally scan it, and it's set up through Scout Tech. Go learn on how to do that. ExodusOutdoorGear.com. Awesome cameras. Check them out. You'll be very happy that you did. And yeah, that's all I'm going to say about that. Excalibur Crossbows, man. ExcaliburCrossbow.com. A company that is in the conversation when it comes to the industry, right? They've been selling crossbows for 30 years. So they have a name behind, how do I put this? They have a reputable name in the hunting industry with their crossbows. You don't have a company for 30 years that's as successful as Excalibur is without providing high quality pieces of equipment, right? And they do that not only in the design, but in the materials they use to build their crossbows. These things can take an ass beating and they still function at a very high level. So if you are considering picking up a crossbow, head on over to Excalibur's website, take a look at their new crossbow, the Twin Strike, and all the other options that they have available. So excaliburcrossbow.com. That's the commercial block. Thank you very much for being patient. Now let's get into today's episode where me and Bob Polanic just BS for about an hour. Enjoy. 3, 2, 1. It has been a very long time. And just looking at Skype here, it says it's been 5 months. And I feel horrible that it's been 5 months since I talked with you and had you on the pod, the podcast. But Mr. Bob Polanic, man, how the hell are you?
I'm good, man. I just was wondering if we're still friends or not.
I'm just using you for your knowledge.
Yeah, or lack thereof. I figured that's why I got kicked off, because I just haven't bought new gear or anything like that lately. So
no, I don't know why, honestly. Shitty schedules. The fact that life is crazy. Now it's hunting season, and we're already bouncing around the countryside like maniacs. And before we get into today's episode about, you know, we're going to BS about hunting gear and equipment a little bit. You recently just went on an elk hunt. Talk about that.
I did. I went out west for about 2.5 weeks. Drove out there. I drove to Idaho. Hunted a new unit in Idaho this year, which was a cool challenge, but not exactly what I was looking forward to, considering I had about 3 years of experience in the same unit prior to this year. But Idaho kind of realigned their tag availability per unit for non-residents, and so the unit that I wanted got sold out like day one, and had to find a new unit. And I know a couple guys out there that were able to point me in the good direction. So that was kind of that September 10th to the 18th time frame I was there, and it went well. There was a little bit of hunting pressure, and it was on the warm side, but we got into plenty of elk. I called in a bull for a buddy, and he took a 52-yard shot, and his arrow hit a branch and deflected. So that was, and he missed, so clean miss. So that was a bummer. And then, yeah, I think the next morning I called in a bull to myself, and he hung up at 60 yards. He was basically, we were on one ridge, and then he was on a ridge on the opposite side of the drainage. And we started talking to him in the morning, and he came in fired up. And this was like September 12th, maybe. And he started coming down the ridge, so we went down our ridge, and I mean, we were running down the side of this mountain, tripping, falling. I fell twice, I think, but we were, every time we'd cow call at him, I was basically flying down a mountainside, and I was just letting out cow calls as I was going at him, and he was bugling every time, and I could just hear him getting closer and closer and closer. And we met at the bottom of the drainage, but there was a big creek that flowed through it, and there's some pretty big boulders on each side of it that lined the creek bottom. And he just wouldn't come across that creek. And by the time he got down there, I couldn't get closer to, I don't know, 60 yards. But we watched him pace back and forth for probably 5 minutes, just bugling, chuckling. And after a while, he couldn't, you know, there's supposed to be a cow that he could see somewhere, and there wasn't. So he kind of finally just boogied off. But we had some other good encounters. I took a...
Was he with cows at that time?
I could hear him. I could hear his cows mewing behind him. But, so yeah. And it seemed like they were kind of just herding up at that point too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But that was those 2 days back to back. Those are super cool encounters. And then, yeah, we got on a herd of cows, I don't know, a couple days later, and I took a 74-yard shot at a cow, and, sailed it right over her back. But yeah, that's how it goes, man. And then from there, well, go ahead. You got any questions?
No, I was just saying, it sounds to me like you were in them, I mean, were there days where it was dry and you weren't hearing any bugles or you weren't seeing any elk, or were you kind of in the elk all the time?
We were in them, but we were where what we had to go through to get to them was obviously like a little bit more than what like the average guy was. We weren't doing anything crazy. It's not like we were hiking 10 miles back in the dark or whatever, but we had a solid mile hike down an old logging road in the morning that we would, you know, we'd start off an hour before it got light out. We'd get the end of that. And then we had a straight, like 1,000-foot climb up a pretty steep mountain, right after that, just to get back into like the backside of this dark timber area. And once we got back in there, we could just tell that the elk were a lot more responsive and less pressured. So,
yeah, that's crazy, man. Like when I was in Colorado, I was higher in altitude, but I wouldn't say that the terrain was near as steep as I was in Idaho. Like Idaho was just way more gnarly than it was. However, in Colorado, there was way more deadfall that we had to deal with. What was the terrain? What was the steepness of elevation that you were dealing with?
Oh gosh. I guess I don't know how to exactly to describe it besides that it really, really sucked.
Enough said, right?
There was a lot of stuff that was straight up and down. It was very spiny, just like it was pretty rugged terrain for sure. It was the steepest country that I've ever elk hunted in.
Yeah.
So it was a butt kicker.
Yeah.
But hey, that's what you train for, and we were all right. Coming down that 1,000 feet at night, you know, when your legs are tired, I think that sucks more than going up it, honestly.
Yeah.
So just all that, just jamming your knees and your toes into the front of your boots, and that's what really hurts the most, I think.
Yeah. But, that's what got me. Like, don't get me wrong, my ass cheeks burning in like hardly any air as you're climbing up a mountainside. That really sucks. However, when you're coming down and your legs, like you said, are tired, and I got shitty knees anyway, oh my Lord, man, it's just like, then the next morning, like for me, my knees are just inflamed already and you just got to go do it again.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah, we came out of one. That bull that we chased down into that bottom that I just was telling you that was bugling. We ended up going up the ridge that he was on after him and tried to make a play on him in the afternoon. Never did get back on him, but we thought we could get out of that area by kind of walking the ridge out, and it put us into a nasty bottom, and it was the worst experience. Getting out of that was the worst experience of my entire life. We were side-hilling. The deadfall was so thick and stacked so high that parts of it, we were going underneath it. And if you weren't going underneath it, you were literally like crawling over top of it. And there'd be times that the deadfall was stacked so high, you'd be on top of it and it'd be 10, 12 feet down to the ground.
Yeah.
So it was brutal.
Yeah.
So,
man, I don't know. Like, I wish I had the ability to scout elk and mule deer like I can whitetails, right? So like here it is October 1st when we're recording this, and I have no, like, I'm not worried. I feel like I have a good enough knowledge base throughout all of my years of hunting experience that I'm going to be able to go and put myself on a good whitetail this upcoming season, right? I'm not stressed about it. But when I get out west, you shrink that time frame down. You don't have the ability to scout. Your everything happens on the fly out there. And whether I'm in South Dakota or I'm in Colorado, you know, obviously there's two different terrains right there, land flows there. But it just, then I'm just like, okay, I got X number of days to get it done, and I have to learn on the fly, and I have to locate these animals on the fly. And, you know, that's why statistically those animals are harder to kill than whitetails.
Yeah, for sure.
And especially, I mean, for like non-residents.
You nailed that. For a non-resident, we get a week a year, maybe two. I mean, if you're lucky, you get more than that. I don't. To learn it and then even like going to a new area, new terrain, I mean, some of that's the thing that where experience in an area starts to really help you, because you know you know, the black holes to avoid and stuff like that. So, right. But yeah, anyway, from there, I went to Montana and I hunted Montana for a week in an area that I've been hunting for, 5 or 6 years, and hunted with a good buddy of mine that lives out there. And, that hunt was all right. It snowed. See, we hunted that from like a Saturday to a Friday. And on Sunday, the second day we were there, it snowed like 2-3 inches. And we were camp. That's a hunt that we do, that we camp in. We don't really day hunt it. We hike tent and food and all that stuff in for 4, 5, 6 days. So
yeah.
So that was a little brutal way to start it. And the morning after it snowed, I mean, bulls were firing left and right, and then about an hour after it got light out, they just shut right up.
So you had to pretty much be on them, right? You had to pretty much be on them to find them. Yeah.
Yep. And that, yeah, sometimes like we'd get so close to them, you know, it's dark timber. Sometimes we'd get so close to them that they'd bugle all of a sudden randomly at 80 yards and come flying in on us, kind of like a, hey, what are you, you know, type of deal from the bull. And, yeah, so we had some good encounters. No shot opportunities. So it was a tough year in Montana, and it was kind of a bummer because Montana's typically a lot more encounters. It's usually less people this year. We ran into 3 different hunting groups that it was all their first time on that range. So yeah. That used to kind of be able to go there in the parking lot would only have 2 or 3 vehicles. And this year it had like 10 the whole time.
Did you walk up to those people? Did you walk up to those people and say, we've been here longer, you need to leave?
No, not at all. No, we're cool with it. We try to take the approach that, hey, it's at least everyone's out enjoying the resource. So,
right. But well, elk hunting, right? It's going to make that time when you arrow that bull next year or the year after or whenever that much more sweet, right?
Yeah, that's kind of how I view it too, man. It's like as a non-resident only getting out there a week or two a year, it's kind of a long play. You're not going to fill your tag every year.
Just, right.
Again, I'm not. If there's guys that are going out west 1 week a year hunting public land and every single year consistently filling a tag on a nice bull, just mad respect.
Absolutely.
Because that's
something special.
You're just better. You're something special.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's pivot into the gear side of things, right? Every time we get together, we talk about, you know, like my gear is doing its job if I'm not thinking about it. And you know, like if I'm thinking about my gear, it's uncomfortable, or my boots hurt, or, you know, my packs ride me, or something's, or my water filtration system broke or whatever, then it's a bad thing. So did you have any pieces of gear, while you were on this trip that, like gave you any type of trouble?
Yeah, I wear Crispy boots.
Yeah.
Still a big fan of them, but I'm on year 4 with, my Crispy, I think they're the Summits. And, basically I've worn the tread off the bottom of them and I was like slipping on grass and stuff like that.
Okay.
Like I was slipping on grass, like on a hillside, like on a mountainside.
Yeah.
So, like it was a grassy mountainside and it was wet in the morning. If I stepped on it, my boot would just slip and I couldn't figure out what's going on. And finally I was sitting there in the afternoon, kicked my boots off, and I looked at the bottom of them like, oh, there's no tread left. That's probably what's going on.
Yeah.
But I had a backup pair with me, and they were the Crispy Wyomings, and I was pretty happy with those.
Yeah. I'll tell you this, to piggyback off what you just said, I got a pair of Crispy Thors, and I'm going into year number 4 with them as well. And they're comfortable as shit right now, right? They're broken in. They fit my foot excellent. Yep. But after 4 years of beating the shit out of them, I feel like now they are starting to reach the, you know, I'm gonna go through the rest of this year with them, okay? But I'm not gonna do another year with them because I don't want there to be a, oh shit, look what just happened to my boot. I'm in the middle of nowhere situation. And now I'm screwed. Yep. And I mean, Last year, I cleaned my boots up really good. I sprayed silicone all over them, or that the waterproofing, right? And that did an excellent job. This year I did the same thing, and I got them wet for a day when I was in Nebraska this year, and that waterproofing did not hold. So the waterproofing's gone out of them, right? Even me reapplying it didn't do the job. So I know that if I'm going to run into any wet conditions, I got to bring a different pair of boots along with me.
Yep.
So now when I go to South Dakota in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I'm going to be bringing a backup pair for wet occasions. And they're not as comfortable. They're my, Danner pronghorns, and they're not near as comfortable of a fit as my, they're a little bit bigger, a little bit bulkier compared to, like, I feel like Crispies are a pair of Jordans, like a basketball shoe, like light but durable compared to some of these other brands of hiking boots that have they're more of a truck than a sports car, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I feel like Crispies are a little bit on the, it's almost like a softer boot.
Yeah.
It's just got more flex to it. And it provides you with a little bit more all day comfort. I think.
Yeah. So it, like next year, honestly, probably at the end of this year, and I might even yet buy another pair of Crispies before I buy my, I get into my whitetail rut. That way I can use the whitetail rut to break them in, if that makes sense. Because I'm going to be walking, but I'm not going to be hiking like I am in some of these other scenarios.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
for sure.
The boots, huh? Anything else?
Oh no, I'm still running a lot of the same stuff I've been running for probably the last 2 years, really. Mystery Ranch backpack that does great. That's kind of, I don't know that those backpacks really have a break-in period, but I don't know. It just wears nice. All my Sika gear, you know, whether it be, you know, I was wearing anything from the Apex pant to the Mountain pant to the Timberline pant, depending on weather. Those all function great. Same with
that Mountain pant's badass, man.
I do like the Mountain pant. I like the Apex pant when it's warm, man. Yeah. That's like, those are nice and lightweight.
Yeah. Would you choose one over the other? If I said you're only putting one in your pack, it's going to be the Apex, or it's going to be the Apex or the Ascent, right? We're talking about the Ascent pant.
No, I got Apex is kind of a lightweight pant. I think it's just a touch heavier than probably that Ascent pant. And then you got the Mountain pant, which is like midweight, and then you got the Timberline pant, which is essentially the Mountain pant with waterproof knees and ass.
Okay. Out of those three, if you only had to pick one for both hunting scenarios, you know, if you're hunting from the truck or if you're hunting from a base camp, but you only had to pick one of those pairs of pants, which one are you picking?
I go Mountain pant. They're just a little bit thicker. They're a little bit tougher than that Apex. They're still, you know, even if it gets in the 70s, they're not too hot.
And they got that windproofing in them too, right?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? Okay. All right.
No. The Timberlines, they're good, and they have that waterproof knees and butt on them, but that creates like a swishing effect or a swishing sound when you're walking. So they're not as quiet. So, yeah. And then they are a bit warmer, but no, I think if I just had the Mountain pant from the beginning of September to the end of September for elk hunting, it'd be totally fine.
Yeah. What about the tops? I mean, did you match it with the Mountain jacket?
No, I was rocking a lightweight Merino top, and then I would throw the Apex hoodie over that, and then a Jetstream vest, and then the Kelvin active jacket, and that's really about it. I wore the Jetstream like full jacket with the hood, like the one day that it snowed, more than that, I wore it the following mornings when like all the snow was melting off the trees.
Yeah.
just because that does have a little bit more of like a, it's got that DWR coating. It's a little bit more water repellent, stuff like that. Yeah. And yeah, there's just giant chunks of snow falling off all the pine trees and stuff like that. But that's pretty much you'll find me mountain pant and Apex hoodie with Jetstream vest on. That's typically my go-to.
I tell you what, if anybody in Michigan is listening to this right now, somewhere, I'm going to say, not by you, but in some public land, somewhere in Michigan is an Apex hoodie with with my hunting Michigan hunting license and tags in it that I lost along a hike in. It was either in or out in the dark. And I looked back and I can't find it. So it's somewhere in this dirty ass hole of all this grown up vegetation that I was stomping through where I ended up losing it. So if you find it, you can have it, but just take a picture of it and send it to me because I loved that garment.
Oh yeah. That's Apex hoodie is my favorite, favorite piece for elk hunting for sure. Yeah.
Yes, sir. So. But other than that, like when you did your tent type style hunt, your tent, your sleeping pad, your sleeping bag, water filtration, all that stuff work for you?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So tents and sleeping bags, I've always used Kelty. It's just, I don't know, they're cheap. They're cheaper, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I used a 0 degree down sleeping bag. And a couple of our nights got down in the low 20s, and I had to throw some Merino bottoms and keep my Merino top on, and even throw my Kelvin active jacket on to stay warm. But I kind of expected that. But I was on I think it's like a Big Agnes sleeping pad. It's inflatable.
Yeah.
And then Kelty tent as well. That was that worked out well. I forget exactly which one. It's a three person, even though it's just two of us. But that held up real nice. Water filtration, I still use the Sawyer squeeze.
Yeah.
I still like that. And then Jet Boil. Oh, I did switch up some of my meals. I went to Peak Refuel. Kind of got away from the Mountain House meals and the Peak Refuel ones, like especially the Chad Mendez ones.
Yeah.
Excuse me. They're super tasty. Some of the non Chad Mendez ones, I noticed they still have like they're still like 900 or 1,000 calories, but the actual volume of food is less. So you don't get that like big like full belly feel.
That's important
after you eat them, but I would have to say so. I was like, oh, I know I got my calories, but I still feel hungry.
Yeah, well, and that's one thing. I don't know about you, but after big all day hunts, right, and you're just munching and you haven't filled your stomach yet, and then you go back and you're trying to, like, I hate when I'm halfway through a meal and I'm full, but you know you need to eat those calories because you're going to need them the next morning when you're going. And that sucks, eating on a full stomach when you hit that point. And I agree that everything you just said, the only downside is those Peak Refuels are just, you know, they're obviously more expensive. And then the Chad Mendez version of those Peak Refuel meals are even more expensive yet, just because of, I'm sure, his association with them. You know what I mean? So,
right. Right.
So yeah, there's that. But I will say this, they are extremely delicious. I love, I think there's only a couple, like the chili Mac or the macaroni Mac or whatever that one is. I'm not a fan of that one, but the, sweet pork and rice, that's my favorite. And then the Parmesan, or the Parmesan chicken, I think it's called, some of the other ones, like a white sauce and pasta are some good ones. That,
yeah, there's like
elk ragu.
There's like a penny pasta. Yeah, the elk ragu. There was a bison masher. Yep. That was super good. That was that was like Thanksgiving dinner, man.
Yeah.
That was delicious.
Yeah. Very good. Very good.
Yeah.
So let's see here. Food, binos hold up okay. I mean, you described walking through all this nastiness, going up and down, falling down a couple times. No like rips in your pants, no damage to any of like your bow or anything like that.
No, no damage to my bow. I was pretty surprised by that because it was, you know, after about going through that stuff for an hour and a half, you kind of just, you don't even care what you're damaging anymore. You just want to be out of it.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, so I did. I mean, we did a morning hunt that next day. And then we when it got out of there in the afternoon, we both agreed that we needed to shoot our bows and make sure they're still on. And they were. Everything was good.
Yep.
No tears or anything like that. Just a tear to my soul and who I am. Yep. Part of me was left down in that drainage.
but and that's without packing an elk out of there, right? Just imagine if you had the meat on your back.
no way. We realized that we would have had to, next time, the way we go into that drainage is the same way we come out. We don't try to shortcut it. That's right. What it was. Gotcha. Try to take a shortcut.
Gotcha. All right. Let's pivot to whitetail gear here. Because I want to make sure we talk about this. Now, this is full disclosure. Okay. I am, on the Nine Finger Chronicles side of things, I am supported. I am sponsored by Exodus Trail Cameras. Okay. But I think, this is a full disclosure conversation because, you know, I feel it is to the end user, to the, that just because I'm saying something doesn't mean that's how it is, right? I've had nothing but good experiences with Exodus and the people who work there. Everything I've ever had from them, I still have cameras out in the woods right now that are working from their first pull, right? And this is before I even started working with them. I've worked with them a little bit. I've stopped working with them and now I'm working with them again, right? That's just kind of how the business side of it goes. And I've had, honestly, nothing but good experiences with those. I talked to you about this a while ago and you're just like, man, I'm kind of frustrated with these Exodus cameras, man. So kind of walk us through what was happening with your trail cameras and why you were frustrated with them.
Well, so yes, I've got six Exodus renders. That's the cellular camera, that the Exodus provides. Yep. They all died within like 4 weeks and it was complete operator error. There's an on-demand feature and, I had that turned on them. And basically what that will do is that's essentially about the same as if you took your cell phone, attached it to a tree, and it was just left on connected to the internet.
I gotcha.
It's the same thing when that on-demand feature is on, your camera is just on. It still might only send pictures once a day or whatever your settings are, but it does provide you with the option that if you want to log in and have, you know, take a picture instantly, it will do it. That's essentially what the problem was. I think I got a hold of Exodus via Instagram. And they got a hold of me like within a few minutes and had the whole problem solved within a couple minutes of looking at my account and all the like how my cameras were set up and stuff like that. Beyond that, I will say this. I had Exodus camera that I lost last year. I thought I had lost it. It fell out of my truck in Iowa in January when I was there. The season closes January 10th. Up, buddy and I went there for the last couple of days. Fell out in the mud on a cattle farm. I don't know if cattle stepped on it, but the landowner called me in March and was like, I think I found one of your cameras in the mud. And he said it was like he could barely see it because it was just buried in the mud. I picked it up from him. Cleaned it all up, put batteries in it, and it worked flawlessly. Excellent. Now, that same camera I had on the stick and pick, and a hawk landed on it and beat it all to hell, and it died. And when I went and found it, I knew something happened because it was on a stick and pick, and then there was a picture of a hawk, like up close and personal, and then it just took, and then it was pointed straight down at the ground. and all it did was take pictures of poison ivy, which was just like, that doesn't get me enough anyway. And now I got a cell cam taking photos of it. Anyway, that camera died, and when I went and checked it on my way out elk hunting, it was in Nebraska. I stopped by and grabbed it. The antenna was all broken. You could see claw marks on the screen and stuff like that, and there was a bunch of moisture in the camera. So I deactivated it. I got a hold of Exodus, and they're gonna repair it for, or they're gonna send me a new one for 50% off, which is their warranty. Yeah. For 5 years.
Yeah, that's a badass. So, that's a badass warranty, by the way.
Yeah. Oh yeah. For sure. I mean, if it gets stolen, you can get a new one for 50% off, and that's huge.
Yeah. All right. So you kind of took care of that then, right? I mean, that whole situation, you're not pissed anymore.
Pardon me?
You're not pissed anymore at that whole situation.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's my fault.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say something though. In your defense, nobody reads trail camera instruction books, man. Like I've had them in the past where, you know, there's the instruction book. It tells you what you need to do. I don't think it's near as bad as the trail cameras that they have out today compared to the trail cameras that they've had out 5 to 10 years ago. Okay. Where there was steps that you needed to go through. I mean, do you remember when the first SD card cameras came out? You actually had to take that SD card to a computer and format it on a computer a certain way before you put it into the trail camera.
Yeah, I do recall that.
Yeah. So imagine me going out, setting out, and I think they were Moultries. I can't remember if I had Moultries or Coverts all those years ago that had this issue. And I called up and I'm just like, listen, man, these, I have 5 trail cameras. They're not putting out any type of, you know, they're not taking any pictures. What's the deal? Did you format the SD card in the instruction book? No. I put the SD card in and I turned it on and walked away. Like, well, you have to do that. I'm just like, Jesus, man, like, can't anything be easy anymore? Like, so I said that 10 years ago, you know, 5 to 10 years ago. And now I think the trail camera manufacturers are starting to get the hint. Like, this has to be stupid proof. Their cameras have to be stupid proof because A, no one reads the instructions, and B, you should, in my opinion, you should be able to put an SD card in the trail camera, format it, turn it on, and walk away. That is what I want in a trail camera anyway. So, like I said, I think a lot more trail cameras are going down that path. With that said, do you have any of their renders that are currently sending you information?
Yes. I've got 5. I still got 5 in Nebraska that they're all up and running.
And do you have the solar panel with them, or do you just have the?
I've got a few. I've got a few with the solar panel. Yep. Okay.
What's it looking like out there in Nebraska this year? You getting excited, or is it just average?
I'm waiting. I'm being patient. There's one 3.5-year-old buck that showed up here just about a week ago. He's nothing special. Probably a 120, 125 inch 8-point with a little kicker coming off his brow tine. But that property does not really get, it's a rut property, man.
Yeah.
It's so thick. It's so dense. I personally think that it's so thick and gnarly that, velvet bucks don't really care to hang out in there. They just don't want to bump their rack on everything. I mean, it's until some foliage comes down, until they really start using it. And like the crops come out all around there. They don't really fill up in that timber and kind of get the trails opened up until right about now. So every year, about mid-October, all of a sudden just more and more random mature bucks start showing up. And then they're kind of there all the way through till end of November. So it once in a while, I'll get some big ones in velvet there. But it's just the last few years, it seems more and more that if you just patiently wait, they'll be there. And I don't ever go hunt there till end of October, November anyway. So
gotcha. So, yeah. Gotcha. Well, that's good. That's good. All right. Any other whitetail type products that you've ordered this year or you got in the mail? I think there was one other one that you may have mentioned that
I know that you're sponsored by Exodus, but I can speak on three other cell camera brands.
I don't care. Go for it.
One of them. So Moultrie Deltas, that's a cell cam. Don't buy it. Just don't do it to yourself.
Is it garbage?
The app, it is garbage. All the pictures are either like, if it's at night, all the pictures are like black, unless the deer is like right in front of the camera.
Yeah. How much does that camera cost, by the way?
Probably like $120.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it, in my opinion. The app kind of sucks too. That is one thing that's really nice about the Exodus app. It's through like Scout Tech. And that app.
Scout Tech. Yeah.
Is that what it is?
I think it's Scout Tech.
Yeah. That app's fantastic.
Yeah.
And this, the functionality of a render versus any camera that I've found is, it's second to none.
Yeah.
Moultrie Delta, I would just steer clear, save your money. There is a Bushnell Cellucor. I think that's around that $100 price point. It seems like it's doing all right. I just put those out about 3 weeks ago. They take decent photos. Very limited on functionality, though. There's no, like, I don't think there's a trigger delay that you can set up on them. So I think it just takes photos. I don't know if you can do multi-shot even. And then you can have it send photos like immediately or once a day or once a week. You can't do twice a day or four times a day or anything like that. So it's a little bit more limited. But other than that, it seems to be all right for the money. And then the Reveal X, I think that brand kind of speaks for itself. That's a good camera. My only complaint is that they're just simply never in stock. You just can't ever get your hands on them. So,
and what brand's that?
It's made by Tacticam.
Tacticam, yeah. I've heard decent things about that for its price point.
Yeah, it's like $115 to $130, but man, they're sold out immediately.
Yeah. So they obviously must work, right? If there's a brand that you hear bad things about and they're still in stock, and that goes for any piece of hunting equipment right now, or just about anything related to a hobby or a sport. I mean, shit, my son, we were looking for shin guards for him for soccer. Couldn't find them anywhere, right? Sold out. There were certain brands that were there, but then you go to read the reviews. Oh, the sock comes apart or something like that. And then if it has a bad review associated with it, it's in stock, but you don't want to buy that. Right. I mean, everything from mouth guards to cleats to, anything that has to do with a hobby or a sporting activity. If it's good, it's sold out. And that goes with a lot of the manufacturers in the hunting industry right now. So
I believe it.
Yeah. So there's that. All right. So some good, some bad with the trail cameras there. Anything else in the whitetail world?
Oh, gear wise?
Yeah.
Man, I'm trying to think if there's anything gear wise that I've got. I got a new rangefinder. Loophole. It's a Loophole RX4.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice. I mean, you can enter in your like your arrow weight and speed, and then it will let you know. Like if you're ranging something at 40 yards, but there's like overhanging brush or whatever, it will let you know that like your arrow, the arc of your arrow is either clear or not clear.
Yeah.
So that's super nice. Oh, dude, this is super, super simple and super cheap, and I highly recommend it to everybody that kind of elk hunts, and I know we're talking about whitetails, but Marsupial Gear, they sell bino harnesses. And they have these two little clips that attach to any sort of strap, and they're just clips for your bowstring. And it just makes it so you can just quick throw your bowstring on it and you can let go of your bow. You can be hands free. You don't have to set your bow down. You don't have to try to balance your
and that goes on your bottom bino harness
on the toe of your boot. Pardon me?
That goes on your bino harness.
It can go on your bino harness. It can go on the like the waist belt of your backpack.
That's not a bad idea.
I had my wife take a photo of me with it. I look like a moron, but I'll send it to you.
Yeah. Sounds like great functionality because everything that you said, I mean, if you, there's a deer or an elk or anything moving fast across the landscape and you got to quickly get your binos on it, the first thing I have to do is set my bow down or lean it up against me and then go, you know, then get them out of my bino case and then put them up. Right. So if you could just quick hang go, that seems like a one or two second save.
Oh yeah, man. Everyone that I elk hunted with this year was like, why didn't you tell me about that? And I was like, man, I can't give out
all my secrets. I need that one second advantage ahead of you. So I kill the bull and not you.
Exactly.
So exactly. Cool, man. Well, what are you excited about for this upcoming season? I mean, any other gear type things that you're excited to use again, or did you get a new bow since the last time that we talked, or is it the same bow from last year?
I got a new bow last year. It was the Matthews VXR. I'm still very happy with it. It's solid. Yeah. I was able to rock the, so the nice thing about that VXR is you can switch the peak draw weight by simply just switching out the mods on it.
Yeah.
And so I've got 75-pound mods and 70-pound mods. So for elk hunting, I use 75-pound mods, and for whitetails, I use 70. And you don't need a bow press or anything like that. Like, each one's just two little screws. Either your pins get a little closer together or you got to move them a little further apart, but it's not too bad.
Yeah.
So I like that. It's quiet, accurate. Yeah. So, yeah.
So I'm going to share a quick story here, about my recent bow, experience. So I think I talked to you about this on a previous episode, but I spent all off season shooting a variety of different bows. I shot Matthews, I shot Prime, I shot Hoyt, I shot Elite, I shot Bowtech, I shot what are some of the other big name bows that I shot?
Did you say Hoyt, yeah. Obsession?
I did shoot an Obsession. Prime and a PSE, PSE bow. All right, so and I don't know, man. I used to talk some mad shit, I'll be honest, on Matthews. Like, I just didn't like their bow, right? However, this year, of all the bows that I shot, I will rank them as the top three in my favorite, and then everything else was just so, like, it's just the same, right? I mean, everything else past the third space was, you know, all relatively the same. So I guess in third place was the new Matthews. And then honestly, dude, PSE this year, in my opinion, put out a crazy good bow. Like, real, like, it was, I almost bought that bow. I almost got it. And there's only one thing, there's one small little feature compared to the Bowtech solution, which I ended up getting, that at full draw, they felt relatively the same, but at full draw, that PSE, I felt like it was pulling against me and it just wanted to go. And I didn't have as much control over it as I did on the Bowtech solution. And so I ended up going with the Bowtech solution. So, and just from feel, that's how I pick my bows, right? So as I'm in the bow shop shooting, I said, hey, I want a 29-inch draw. And so he gets me a 29-inch draw and he's like, dude, And this is the difference between going to a box store or a store that has, I guess you want to say, average Joes working at it and not an official bow tech, right? So the bow tech, the owner of this bow shop, where his job is literally one thing. All he cares about is selling bows and bow accessories and setting up everybody that comes in his store, right? So he's looking at me at full draw and he goes, dude, you're not a 29, dude. You're a 30. I said, well, I've always shot a 29. I've always shot a 29 inch draw. And he goes, here. He switches the cams out, or the pegs out, or whatever it is on that Bowtech solution. And I'm at 30 inches now. And I feel like a jackass. How long I've been shooting a bow. And I've never, like, no one has ever questioned me saying 29 inch draw. No one has ever, like, when I've gone into stores and stuff, no one has ever said, hey, have you ever tried this or ever tried this? They're just going with 100% what I've, you know, I've told them. So this guy, F6 Archery down in Mount Pleasant, Iowa, by the way, shout out those guys, very knowledgeable. I'm at full draw and it is a different world. Like, I feel so much more comfortable holding a bow at full draw. I don't feel like it's coming out of my, it's not pulling against me like some of these other bows that I've had in the past. And I'm going to tell you right now, I got a bow and then I took it to a shop where they're, I got the bow somewhere else. And then, I ended up taking it to another bow tech closer to where I live, and I took the time to time the cams. Like, typically I would get a bow, I would put my rest on it, I would have someone put my rest on it, I would put the sight on it, and then I would sight it in myself, and then there would be no other type of adjustments, and that's how I would do it. So I took the extra time.
You wouldn't do any paper tuning or anything, you know, like that?
I did with my last bow, but I don't think it mattered near as much because I was an inch shorter than what I needed to be, right? Like, you take an inch out of your draw and then you shoot that bow. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to feel the same. It's going to feel different for you. If you're uncomfortable at full draw, they're just not going to add up, even if your bow is tuned the right way, right? So anyway, he times the cams. He adjusts the peep sight like three times for me. He adjusts the, I rock a kisser button too. So he adjusts the kisser button. He adjusts the peep sight. He put like a quarter twist or a half twist or whatever it was into the cable. And then he's like, dude, these cams are perfectly timed now. I said, awesome. So I shoot it. And I'm going to say this. I have never shot one of those bows. I've heard my friends shoot them, right? Because I'm there when they are shooting their bows and it has that almost perfect efficiency sound where it's just like,
yep.
Like, wow. Yep. You know, just there's no extra noise to it. All my other bows have had some kind of extra noise I felt, and I've never had it. So I shoot a couple rounds I shoot a couple arrows at the store. It sounds loud because you're in this box room. Yep. So I come home and I shoot it, and I'm just like, holy shit. Like, not only is this bow now timed perfect, but it's also at a more comfortable draw length for me. And I was saying to myself on some of these other podcasts that I was doing that I need, you know, like, I'm not going to take this brand new bow on on my South Dakota hunt because I want to make sure it's tuned properly. I'm accurate with it. It's set up properly and I'm comfortable with it before I take it out. But dude, by the end of next week, it's going to be a no-brainer. I'm taking that new bow to South Dakota with me. I just feel so confident with it and I can't believe it. And it's probably not the fact that it's a Bowtech solution, but it's the fact that I had someone educated in archery tell me what I was doing wrong and how I needed to fix it. On both the guy telling me I needed a 30-inch draw, and then again, me taking time with another bow tech to really focus on the tuning aspect of it. And it is a night and day difference. And I'll tell you this, shooting a well-tuned bow is fun as hell to shoot.
Yeah.
Compared to other anything else. So I don't know what your experience is with anything like that, but I just had to share that because I think it's important.
Oh, you're spot on, man. Couple things. I will say, I know that shooting a bow that is too short for you, you can still shoot it accurately. You can shoot it more accurately than if, say you're a 30-inch draw and you're shooting a 29-inch bow. You're going to be more accurate than if you were shooting something with a 31-inch draw.
Yeah.
Like if you were overdrawn, it's harder to be accurate. I do know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, when your field points and your fixed broadheads can fly the same at 60 yards, like that's a magical feeling.
Yeah. And that's another thing that I read in an article recently was, some of the best archers that are out there, when they go ahead and set up, obviously they have their competition bows, but then they have their hunting bows. They're just like, I don't even put field tips on those arrows because I'm not ever going to shoot this bow with a field point on it. I'm going to put my broadhead on it, and that's what I'm tuning my arrow with. So I took that whole mentality with this new bow, and I haven't shot one field point out of this bow yet. And it's all been broadheads. And so
just chewing up targets or what, man?
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't give a shit about, honestly, I look at a target, as an, expendable product.
Oh yeah.
Almost. Cause I need to be like, honestly, the only thing I care about as far as my gear is I want my gear to kill a deer. You put together the equation, however you want to put it. For me, the outcome is the same. A dead deer. I want my buck tag in Iowa filled every year. I want, as far as, you know, other type of, hunts that I go on this year, Nebraska, this year, South Dakota, my end goal is to have a dead animal at the end of that. So I want my equipment to add up to equal that dead animal. And that can go a whole bunch of different ways. But when you're talking about your bow and your arrow setup, it has to work. It just has to be a certain way. And I don't, it's almost embarrassing. Here I am 40 talking about it, how stupid and green I am when it comes to archery. But I hope this, me talking about this is, you know, like triggers people and goes, you know what? He's right. Let me take my bow in for one quick checkup before the hunting season starts, or even before the next time you go hunting, just to make sure everything's right. And even though I just got a brand new bow, if you have it tuned right to you and it feels comfortable in your hands, honestly, getting it sighted in really isn't that hard.
Oh, no, not at all.
No.
Nope.
So, yeah.
That's great. Man. On top of that, dude, you're the confidence, right?
Oh, yeah.
Confidence is half of it, right? Confidence is like half your success.
Yes.
So.
Yes. And I cannot, it's going to suck for the first doe that I go out and see this year, unless I'm moving into like a quote unquote buck spot. But if I'm catching if I'm going to specifically an area to hunt a doe in these next couple weeks, man, and she's going to be like 20. I'm going to set up where she's going to come through at about 20 yards. Like I'm already, this sounds bad, but I'm already envisioning me taking the wrapped meat and putting it in the freezer. So
nice.
Yeah. So there's nice. That.
I've got one of those too. I'm going to, the trip I'm doing in Nebraska this year, I've been hunting that farm for like 5 or 6 years, and I've been hunting it with either my wife or my buddy Mike. Buddy Mike, he's probably having his daughter, his firstborn's probably on her way right now or within the next couple of days. His wife's due date was October 3rd. So, any minute now he's going to have a baby. But so he's out for the Nebraska trip. So I got a new buddy coming, and he's never done an out-of-state trip. So I'm kind of just going to take a back seat to it. And by doing that, I'm going to stay close to the south side of the farm, which is like the south edge. There's usually not a lot of buck activity down there. And I'm going to buy a doe tag, and because they're pretty cheap for Nebraska, they're like $50. But there's a processor out there that makes the best hot sticks, and I cannot wait. I cannot wait to drop a doe off to that processor and turn the whole thing into hot sticks and summer sausage.
All of it. You want the back straps? Thing. Nope. I want hot sticks.
I'll pull the back straps. I'll still.
Okay.
Do that.
Okay. Yeah. You're not too crazy.
Mm-mm. So,
Mr. Bob Polanic.
Go ahead.
I'm just. Do you have something else to say? Because I was going to shut her down.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, definitely everyone should definitely, you know, have some sort of baseline knowledge of what their bow and what their arrow is capable of. I mean, if you think about it, there's so much to that goes into killing a deer. There's strategy, there's scent, there's wind direction, there's time of the year, everything, trail cameras, this and that. But there's literally only one thing that connects us to that deer, and it is an arrow. And if you don't have knowledge of what your bow and your arrow is capable of, I think you're just selling yourself short.
Amen.
Like the only thing that connects us to an animal is an arrow. So know what your bow is capable of, know what you're capable of, and know maybe if you are only, you know, if you're only drawing 50 pounds, maybe don't shoot mechanicals, because that takes a lot of energy to open that up at, you know, at a 50 pound draw weight, something like that, or short draw length. You know, maybe if you had a short draw length and a, you know, 50-55 pound draw, you should be shooting fixed blades or something like that. Just know what your components are capable of. You kind of owe it to the animals that you're trying to kill, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I'm off, and that's all. That's all I have for the soapbox.
All right, my friend. Well, hey, good BS session with you. Thank you very much for your time, as always. And good luck in Nebraska, and good luck in Michigan, man.
Yeah, same to you, man. Good luck in Iowa. Thanks for having me on.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Another episode in the books. Huge shout out to Bob. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day, man. Huge shout out to each and every one of you. Again, please be sure to subscribe to the Sportsman's Nation RSS feeds and the Nine Finger Chronicles feeds and the Hunting Gear podcast feed, which this is going to be sitting on both of those. Please go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review. That would help me out the most. There are a couple bullshit reviews in there that I would like to not be on the top anymore. So if someone could do me a big favor, go leave a 5-star review. That would be awesome. Be sure to check out the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel. We got a couple fairly new videos up there. Don't forget about the Nine Finger Kitchen on there as well, where I cook some of my favorite meals. And lastly, please go out and in a positive manner, support the hunting industry. Support the hunting community, and do that by staying positive, treating others with respect, and I don't know, just represent this way of life that we all love so much in a very positive manner. Good vibes in, good vibes out. Wear your safety harness, and we'll talk to you next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.